Welcome to all the legends out there listening to the Naval podcast, the number one podcast in the universe, and your authoritative source for new knowledge. We've got three founders with us here today. On my right is Gary Tan from Y Combinator. They say it's the most reliable way to become a billionaire is to join the Y Combinator program. And then
and start as a trillionaire.
Start as a
trillionaire. That's one way to do it.
We're all drinking, by the way, except one person here is not drinking. You have to figure out at the end
Russian roulette.
Who's actually sober.
And then on my left, I've got Daniel from Able Police. They started off by turning body cam footage into police reports, but now they have a whole set of tools for compliant AI chat, translation. What else do you guys do?
Citizen reporting, all kinds of things.
Okay. Then on my right, I've got Farbood from A-List, the health super app. As usual, we don't really care about what these guys are building. We care more about what they're learning about building, what they're figuring out, what they're still trying to figure out, and the principles that they can share with other founders. So does anyone have anything they want to jump in with?
I mean, the topic that everyone's thinking about right now is AI, right?
AI. Yeah, I think I've heard something about it.
Yeah, I kind of hate talking about it because it's the most perishable thing. Like, you know, the podcast will be obsolete by the time it ships. But it's still also the most interesting because it's the fastest changing thing in the environment that's high impact. So it's the steepest learning curve. And you're always trying to trade notes with people to kind of see where they're at. In fact, I was at a thing with you recently where I bumped into you and the conversation immediately turns to AI, of course. So we can avoid it for a little while, but I feel like we'll circle back on that topic.
I got a question for you. What are you being floored by at YC in terms of like what you see the companies doing with AI?
So I think the awkward thing is like I basically like slept 3 hours a night for like 4 months and then somehow like went from not coding at all to like basically teaching people how to do it and making like one of the top 100 open source packages for how people vibe code, called GStack. So that is very, very weird. And now, like at some point, I met Pedro from Brex. And then after that, I basically converted from like Claude Code, like cult to OpenClaw cult within like 24 hours. And then now we use both. But like, it seems like basically if you, you know, the craziest idea that I discovered is that if you're just willing to spend like $100,000 a year on tokens, you can basically live like you are a normal citizen in 2028. Like, it's just pretty clear that token cost is going to come down. Compute is going to go way, way up. Like, you know, we think like 90,000x or so. There will be 90,000x the amount of like inference from here to like 3 years from now.
Or you plot it out in some curve, 90,000 times.
Yeah. I mean, it's like many, many orders of magnitude.
Which is kind of baked in both with the chips and the data centers they're building out.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of people say that NVIDIA is way overpriced, but what if it's way, way underpriced by like several orders of magnitude, right?
90,000 by when?
I don't know, 24 to 36 months.
Okay, so five orders of magnitude, basically.
Yeah, I mean, we might be off by a couple orders of magnitude.
Yeah, but you know, what's either a few way, orders of magnitude between friends?
I mean, it's actually still a blue ocean right now. The thing that's crazy
is that if you go up by five orders of magnitude, it's not just what it does in terms of usage, but in terms of capabilities, because every order of magnitude you go up, new capabilities emerge. And, you know, I've been pretty behind the curve on AI for a while. Like, I missed it in 2020 to 2022 because, you know, I'd grown up my whole life hearing about AI from when I was doing CS and just assumed it was one of those things like Fusion that was never going to come. And then it came.
Yeah.
And when it came really fast. And at first, a lot of the stuff people were saying about it sounded breathless and like they were talking their own book.
Yeah, it seemed crazy.
They turned out to be right so far, right? And it's not, so I think there were many big questions about AI coming up, right? Now, I think like one question I used to have in my mind was like, is it going to be distributed or is it going to be centralized? You know, and now that's kind of morphed into like, is open source going to be good enough for most use cases or are you always going to need the frontier proprietary models, right? There's the whole thing about like, it's weird that China is making all the open source stuff and the US is doing all the closed source stuff. And so where do we go from there, right? There's the question of, is it going to be nationalized or is it going to be sort of private sector? Especially if you're saying, hey, it's a new Manhattan project, these are the new nuclear weapons, then like private companies building them and controlling them, doesn't make sense. But I think the most interesting remaining question, there's still one that I really care about over the others, where there's no clear answer yet, is I think the people in the labs believe that the scaling laws are such that the AIs will keep getting smarter until they become smarter than the smartest humans, probably through the process of recursive self-intelligence, recursive improvement, or what they call ASI. And I think that is the big question. So, you know, 2 years ago, you could have taken the viewpoint that AI will get you mid at everything, but it's not going to be the pro at anything, right? Now you're getting to the point where it'll get you the pro at everything, but we don't know if it'll get you the last creative mile, that last bit of like moving out of the system and creating something new, not just recombining what's already in the training sets.
Did the progress that it made on the Erdős math problem bother you?
It bothers me for sure. I mean, it not bothers me. It's a process of discovery. I don't want to be bothered by laws of the universe, right?
So it bothered me.
It definitely surprises me.
Yeah, why did it bother you?
But at the same time, I still don't see like broad general creativity. But anyway, that's a separate point.
What was bothersome?
I was a math major and I really loved proofs, and something actually making progress in that domain in a meaningful way that looked really original. Like, there's something creepy about it almost.
But it was directed by someone, right?
Sure.
So, and I think that's
but
fine.
But everyone was surprised who was involved.
Right.
Like, I don't know if you saw the interview
videos.
To me,
all that stuff is kind of, boring. It just means, go do something else. Like, if you have limited time to think about something, do you want to spend it opining over the fact that there's a machine that's better than a human at something now, or just go apply your humanness to something that you haven't thought about yet?
Or actually, to riff on Gary's point, are we going to end up in a place where a machine is strictly better than a machine with a human? Like a human in the loop
That's the biggest question,
right? Like, because chess went that
way. I hope not.
There was Centaur chess. Somebody was telling me about this, but there was Centaur chess where like the chess computer plus the human would beat just the chess computer, but eventually just the computer alone beat the Centaur model.
I guess for me, I'm dealing with AI in the most practical way humanly possible. Spinning up thousands of agents for people on demand. We had to build a massive fleet management system, an eval harness. The reality of it is I don't think intelligence is the bottleneck. Cost is the bottleneck.
Right now,
when we started doing it, every single person in our app has their own open claw running them. It's a really powerful...
Health.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Like mine wrote.
But what
an
about
entire...
just OpenClaw then?
What's that?
People just want OpenClaw right now.
But it's not OpenClaw anymore because when we started with OpenClaw
and
Opus, it was $100 a month per person.
Yeah.
We spent 3-4 months driving that down to $2.84.
Do you use Pi now?
We built an entire stack that is just completely wild that has an eval harness. And then is like an entire agentic fleet that can spin up and down elastic. Nice. So that I deal with the mundane parts of that stuff all the time. I still think what's way more interesting is to think about what humans will do when they don't have to do these things.
But I think that there is a very real phenomenon going on right now where the people who would know the most in the labs are basically saying there will be nothing left for humans to do. Really, when you read between the lines of what they're saying in different ways, but they're saying your harness doesn't matter because within a year, the AI will be spinning up harnesses as needed. And you won't even be the consumer because it'll be talking to other AIs and beyond the Erdős problem, it will be solving fundamental problems of material science and physics and math and engineering and health. Great. Yes, but then, that's taking the average person out on the street, working them up into a frenzy. They're getting angry and scared because fear is a precursor to anger.
My current joke is to try to get all my smart friends to go work at Anthropic so that then I'll have lots of friends there who will get me into the Anthropic level 2 bread line.
Yeah,
because right now I feel like pretty solidly in level 3.
Bread
and then,
line,
I don't know, level 1 seems...
There's only two jobs, all right? It'll be Anthropic employee and sex worker for Anthropic employees, all right?
That's the scary part, right? Yeah. That's the one. And it's getting people worked up. And there are real world consequences of that because you don't live alone. You live inside a thundering herd called humanity. And if that thundering herd decides to go left towards a cliff because it's mad or because it's enraged, because it's poison, you're going to go with it. You know, you're not going to be the lone bison sitting out there by yourself on the edge. So
the thing is,
people are mad.
Nationalization, right? That's where it would go,
Well, but right now that you can see that trend starting with their attacking data centers, right? Yes. They're attacking data centers over.
That's just stupid.
But we look back on this stuff and we think the spinning loom.
It's a rational response, but it's an irrational carrier. So they're saying it's because of water. It's not about water.
Oh, that was a lie that was debunked.
It's not about reason. It's like socialism. It's not about reason.
Indeed.
Right?
It's about how you get the people
going. You're getting poor and you want more money. Or in this case, you're feeling threatened right now. Like you're going to be replaced and you want to stop this train. You want to be like, I want off this train.
I want to be on this train.
Yeah, that's rational.
Totally rational.
So in this case, this is a case of, especially when you have the popular delusions of the madness of crowds, you have have, the ends justify the means. So in this case, the water is just a means. They find another one. If it wasn't water, there'd be some endangered egret, some bird, you know, some snail.
Do you think
are they right? Well, they can't stop it. This technology is a genie. That's what
the genie
is
going to replace. So I don't think that's true.
Like, there's been times in the past where, like, yeah, like smashing like spinning looms actually stopped
briefly,
that revolution.
Very briefly. And it slowed it down.
There was other technologies.
But we have spinning looms now.
But of course, but there's other technologies.
Didn't stop it.
There's other technologies where they like, you know, refused to issue a patent or something, so it became unmarketable because it was just like politically going to be too difficult. I think that basically we ingest, like, you know, 100 years ago, 50% of the labor force in the U.S. was working on farms. And that's no longer true, right? And now
which
it's
is
like
great. Now it's that's two, a great thing.
Now it's 2%.
I don't like working on a farm.
We don't have 48% unemployment. Absolutely,
yeah,
we don't have 48% unemployment, and we all have food, right?
But the question is, what is the speed of transition?
The speed of transition is the problem,
that's the question.
Right?
It's a derivative.
That one took like 60 or 70 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
This one.
So I have good news for you guys.
Faster.
Have you ever worked at a Fortune 500 company? Those things are so stupid.
Nobody has.
Oh, yes. I worked at Microsoft for two years.
No, I mean, like, nobody there works.
Yes, exactly.
It's already all make-work jobs anyway, right? Yes. It's like, how much of the population is working, and then how much of that is working for the private sector, and then how much of that is not working in some bullshit job anyway.
So Graeber was right.
Yeah,
Graeber was always
very
right.
Very few people are actually working.
I mean, I'm working,
Graeber.
I'm working more because of AI. I got six Codex agents running the time.
I'm working the hardest I've ever worked because of AI.
More. And so I just kind of think people are going to work more.
The productivity is way higher. The leverage is way higher. But that's all true until AI can totally and completely replace you, which I don't see around the corner. But I'm more open-minded about it now. Right?
I don't know how you do
I used to think that was an impossibility.
I used to be bearish on that.
Now I'm like,
well, no,
you know,
I mean,
I got to pay attention.
That's exactly my philosophy. It's like, you have two companies, company A, company B. You have the same technology. Everyone has access. Like, you know, hopefully everyone has
access.
Well,
that's a key.
Right?
So are we going to, is it going to be open source?
Right.
Or is it going to be
closed?
That
would be great. Right.
Because right now, if they keep scaremongering, some of that might be, well, now you need national approval. We just saw Sam Altman said that Codex 5.6 will be rolled out slowly to partners approved by the U.S. government first.
My God.
So he's already cooperating because he doesn't want to get shut down like Anthropic did.
Yes.
And so it's already starting. And so then a small number of people, it becomes a Defense Department thing. Then it's like, who has access? Who has control? You know, they have cyber weapons. Maybe they get to hack the systems first. Maybe they get to control them. Maybe they get mass surveillance that we don't for our own good, right? That's how it always starts. So to me, it is definitely much scarier that a small group of people have control over AI than everybody has it. But everybody having it is also scary because of, well, I mean, there's the print a bioweapon thing, but the bioprinter labs are pretty locked down to begin with. So I'm not sure how real that is.
Yeah. Good.
Harry's
like, good,
so.
Ship it.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's now coming out, which many of us already knew and been saying for years, that the funder and creators of the coronavirus, COVID-19, were basically the U.S. government and the Chinese government working in cahoots, right? It was basically Fauci and crew in North Carolina. So the joke I tweeted was like, designed by NIH in North Carolina, assembled in China, right? Because it's like the old Apple line, designed by Apple in California, assembled in China. But that's basically what happened with the coronavirus. They were doing gain-of-function research to build a vaccine. They were being total cowboys. This is crazy stuff. I mean, anyway, I'm not saying AI is necessarily going to lead to bioweapons, because to the extent that AI would lead to bioweapons right now, you know, some smart biohacker student could already do it, right? So it's not
guns
like,
don't kill people,
but it
people kill people.
It is democratizing a certain capability.
I mean, game theory wins out in the end one way or the other.
Game theory on this is not good. When mutually assured destruction is available to every individual, the game theory is not good.
My point of view is the problems are already out there. They're already as bad as you're saying that they're going to be. Like, the problems are already out there, and like AI is the way, and just technology progress in general is the solution to all those problems.
Gary can't even afford his OpenClaw that's like reading his email right now. How is he going to pay for the nuclear bomb claw that?
No, I'm good. I can pay for it. I just want everyone to pay for it.
No, exactly.
I want everyone to be able to pay
for
it.
It's like $100,000 a year, basically.
It's totally worth it. Like, if you hire a person. You can afford your OpenClaw.
People have gotten so, I don't know if it's AI psychosis or what it is, that at this point, I usually just want to be like...
AI anxiety.
AI anxiety. I just want to be like, can I just talk to your AI, please? Like, just, you know, where do I email your AI? I don't need to interact with you, because people are, like, you can't even text someone and get an answer from them anymore.
So many people that are writing emails and writing documents with AI, like on X, I see all these posts that are clearly written by AI. I'm like, why should I read it? I want my AI to read it.
I think that's
if
so
AI
clearly.
If AI is going to write it, AI should read it.
That's so clearly a lower class signal. Like,
exactly.
That's like ridiculous. When I get emails that are clearly written in AI, I'm like, dude, That's the
last
thing.
Well, you can write it better with AI, because what you need is a multi-stage
voice gate.
You write
with AI, don't you?
I sure do, actually. See, I don't know.
That's
hey,
why
you caught
I'm jumping
me.
To the defense. I hate AI writing. It's too verbose. It's too verbose. It's too clinical.
No, but you can fix it. Like that, you know, we have super intelligence. Why wouldn't just write? What's that?
The value of actually reading something and realizing it's written by a person is so much.
Yes, fair enough.
I feel like such a jackass.
And by the way, if you're not writing your own stuff, how are you going to talk? You're going to lose your ability to speak well, because good writing and good speaking are the output of good thinking.
Yes.
And if you're not practicing that muscle, yeah, I suppose you can develop a lot of taste by reading.
My counter argument would be, you know how like sometimes you actually really need like a person. I mean, I don't think this replaces people, but I can have now a high bandwidth conversation with a relatively smart AI model all of the time.
No, and you should do that. You should talk to the AI model all you want. But I'm saying like when you write something that's meant to be consumed by other humans, if that's written by an AI, that's a disservice to the other human. You're wasting their time. Everything the AI wrote should instead be compressed down by you, or you should really like take the time to make the point as succinctly as possible for the other person to respect their time. Otherwise, their AI is going to end up reading your AI, and neither of you are in the loop. You're not even
involved.
This
is one reason I enjoy Twitter less lately, is because so many replies are AI-generated.
I think this is virtue signal. Like, I think in the future, people will just have really, really impressive skill files that actually extract like the style and the diction and like the thing that people underestimate that I've learned with some of this stuff is that you can just have more and more eval. Like you're saying, you have an eval harness, right? Like you can have multiple levels. You can have cross-modal evals, and when you have enough, like sort of, I mean, it's crosstalk, but if you do enough of it, like you can actually improve the skill file to a point where it's indistinguishable, and like this is without the next level of model. Like imagine Fable 7, Fable 8, like you will not be able to tell. I guarantee
in less than nine months.
Yeah. Like this whole AI writing conversation will fucking go away.
I think I'm still a little better defended. I'm higher up on that hill than you guys because I write very, very short. And AIs are very bad at summarizing.
But also
they're very bad at distilling. Right.
Good writing is novelty.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like it's like
surprise.
The unexpected, and anything that is guessing a next token from a regression can't do it.
Yeah.
It won't totally do something true.
It won't do something original.
If you like co-write with an AI or use it as an editor to bounce ideas off, almost always it'll have like this one short, it's always like a short turn of phrase where you're like, oh, that's good.
And it got that from somewhere else on the internet. Problems, but the internet's a big place.
Actually, I programmed a really crazy thing in GBrain. It's the retrieval thing I made. It's actually basically a collider of different vector spaces. And so, I mean, and this is the kind, what I mean by like boil the ocean, like these are things you can do now. Like it has my whole corpus of like everything I've ever said, all my emails, all my Slacks, all my text messages, my DMs, everything. And then, so I actually have like 400,000 markdown files on like literally anything I've ever thought or read at this point. And then I have this thing called LSD mode, which is a lateral, what's the S?
Less as an
lateral stochastic drift. I just wanted to call it LSD.
Yeah, of course.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah. I know. I was trying to remember the chemical composition. Yeah.
Yeah. But basically, it's, you know, take every possible vector space that is not pointed in the same direction, and then cross them, and then do a re-ranking across all of these ideas, and you can actually more like it's called brainstorm LSD mode, and it just like finds bangers. And, you know, sometimes if I just am bored, sometimes I'll just be like, give me some LSD bangers. And it will literally give me like 10 or 20 ideas that like, you know, three or four different frontier models have actually re-ranked and said like, actually, if you look at this and we cross-reference against like EXA, actually, this is actually a really good idea. And I'm like, this is finding ideas at like a ridiculous amount of scale. So, I mean, I get it, but I'm also calling bullshit because I think that like this is just the classic, and I think this is actually a really fun thing that is useful. It's I think it's like a Paul Buchheit-ism. Like the way to build the future is just like live in the future and then work backwards, right?
Right.
And so like it is inevitable that like rather than fucking complain about AI, like it's helpful. Like it scores points. Like I see it on X. Like people love to like fucking score points on me. Okay, so this is a problem. It's like I'm fucking inured to it. Like, I don't give a fuck if someone comes to me and is like, fuck your AI writing. Because it's like, you know what? My AI writing is so fucking good that I don't even give a shit. No, I read it. You know, like, I'm alive. I'm a human being still, right? But Anyway, that's you know, welcome to my TED Talk. No, I just think that, like, I just
no,
think
I
that,
definitely
like,
agree. Like, to predict the future, you just live in the future.
Right.
Right. That's the best way to learn.
And everyone should be
AI maxing.
Yes.
Just to figure it out. Otherwise, you're going to have no sense of where it's going.
I think, like, today's virtue signal is, I think that it's not helpful to people. Like, there are people who are going to listen to this who want to be rich. And they're going to be like, oh, no, like, I shouldn't use AI to write.
No, that would be ridiculous.
Like,
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, I agree with you that, like, human beings and, like, what you really think matters a lot. And you should write.
Yeah.
And then for me, that writing process is, like, actually workshopping in Telegram with
Fair
my
enough.
OpenClaw,
I would say
right?
For me, I don't use AI to write. Well, that's not true. I used to write code, so maybe
yeah.
I am
right.
contradicting myself. But code is like, it's a utilitarian. It's like, it's not meant for, a code is meant to be consumed by another computer. It's not meant to be consumed by a human. So if I want to create something that's meant to be consumed by a computer, I will use a computer.
Yeah.
But if it's meant to be consumed by a human, then I want to understand the thing. I want to, you know, ruminate, marinate within it, and then I want to respect the reader or listener's time.
Yes.
And give them that insight nugget. Now, the
that
AI
is
useful for brainstorming. That part I like. I do use AIs to brainstorm. I use them, like, give me synonyms for this, give me other ideas associated with this, pull in tangential information. You know, I argue with it sometimes, especially because a lot of them are on guardrails. But I don't use it to actually create the output that then I expect a human to sit there and read. That just seems to me like a discontinuity, right? It's kind of unfair, right?
It's a quality thing. I mean, I agree with you. Like, out of box, the quality is bad.
Yeah.
But you can have, like, 2028 level stuff. I mean, I think the pattern that I'm trying to, like, you know, tell people is that, like, yes, like, AI writing out of the box sucks right now. Like, if you rely on it out of the box, it sucks. But if you have an eval harness, if you've actually gone to, like, build a big enough corpus, if you actually, like, you know, done cross-modal eval and, like, built a, you know, a bang, like, I have a banger engine,
but I
have a banger.
But I want to see, like, some banger essays from you.
Yes.
Then. Because I feel like, and even if they were
have
from
like
you,
eight essays right now
even
with
if they
like
were from
a million
you,
views.
They wouldn't even be good enough because you are the president of Y Combinator, right? I want to see someone who's just, like, out there posting, right? Using this system,
I think there are
rise
a lot of
up, make an Anon account, disconnect it from yourself entirely, then come back and throw it in my face when you get to 300,000 followers.
Okay.
Because I'd be so curious if you could do that.
You could absolutely.
That would prove it.
You could absolutely.
You could, because there are 300,000 people out there who will fall for it.
But if you get that, then at least that's something,
but,
right?
But if you pick up PG or me or someone, you know, who's, like, smart and insightful and, like, and wants, like, high quality content and knows what that looks like, you're not going to get those people.
I've never been more creative. And I think something happened probably just in the past few months, especially with Codex. I think I'm way ahead of the curve on Codex. Like, I'm running my computer from home on my phone here in a way that you can't actually do without modifying Codex in some ways. And, like, the amount of creative productivity I have is way higher than it ever was. I think, like, 6 months ago, 12 months ago, the promise wasn't quite there. And so everyone was like, this AI thing is not that useful. But I think it hit an inflection point in the past few months.
Yeah, I think
Claude Code was a tipping point.
Opus 4.5 in
December 2025 was the tipping point, and you had to reevaluate AI. AI has had a couple of tipping points. One was diffusion into images, you know, which kind of started it all when you first saw, like, stability, and you were just like, whoa, okay, made a dog face, and you can make, like, cats and guys on the moon. Yeah, it was wild when it first came out, and then probably instruct GPT and chat GPT, and then there was another jump with the reasoning models, like 01 and 03. But I think the Claude Code was a big unlock because it just unlocked a series of practical use cases, whereas before it was like, okay, it's a better Google search, or, you know, it's like, this saves me time, like, doing research, or I can learn from this, or I can even have a small conversation. But Claude Code was a massive unlock.
Well, and the big thing here is, like, this is the worst it'll ever be.
Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah. No, it's getting
better. There are, like, so many cryptoisms that basically super apply to
You could have said that when Fable was released, and you would have been wrong, because they took it away from us.
Yes.
Briefly. It'll be back.
Use cases, you couldn't tell the difference between Fable and Minimax. For almost any...
So that brings me to a good topic I do want to discuss, which is open source versus closed source, right? How good are the open source models,
so good,
really?
It's unbelievable.
Okay, I haven't tried GLM5
yet.
Five to 10 times less the cost.
Yeah.
Okay, they're definitely cheaper.
When should we use them?
Minimax is just mind-bendingly good.
It needs a good harness, though.
Yeah, it does need a good harness, but it If you got one, it works really well.
I was thinking today, I'd love to see, like, take the latest and greatest open source model, and they seem to have gone from a 12-month gap to a 9-month to 6-month, and now some people are saying 3 months. I don't know if it's weak. Some people are saying 3 months. Whatever. It is what it is. It's very jagged, right? In some domains, they seem caught up. In some domains, they don't. But I would love to see someone take the latest and greatest open source model, put it inside a very good harness, give it all the tools, make it available through a beautiful download desktop app, and jailbreak it. Strip it of every time it pushes back at you for anything stupid, any tone policing, any I don't want to research that. It'll just tell you the truth every time and just call it truth.ai. Like, that's all it does. Like, I just want to see that. I just want to see what happens. Like, because the one place where the frontier model, I'll always pay for more intelligence because I'd rather be right more often than wrong because I just think you're high leveraged, right? And obviously, I can afford it. But maybe if I was doing some highly repetitive task, I wouldn't. But as a simple example, like, if you're doing something where the AI is right 90, you have one AI that's right, I saw this stat, like 99.9% of the time, and the other one's right 90% of the time. Well, if they're recursively looping and you run them 100 times, the one that was right 90% of the time is not going to be right 13% of the time, whereas the one that was 99.9 will drop to 80 or 90, right? So intelligence doesn't matter on the margin. Now, those numbers are obviously chosen 99.9 versus 90. It's not 99 versus 90, you notice. It's 100x more, 100x lower error
it's
rate.
It's like errors, than one, errors can accumulate.
Errors compound. Yeah. That's the point. Errors compound. Anyway, going back, I will pay for more intelligence, but, and I'm not that cost sensitive on matters of judgment because you're always applying leverage and your time is also very valuable. But what I am curious about is the frontier models do annoy me by constantly trying to railroad me. You know, they're always like, well, I shouldn't be telling you that. How about I give you this other answer? That's
okay,
like,
the really messed up thing
how
is
much
like,
of that are they doing?
If you talk to it about like serious personal stuff, and it also like always mess up UTC versus like Pacific time. And it thinks it's like 7 p.m. and it thinks it's like 5 a.m. I was like, hey, this
that's
is enough.
It does,
it's time to go to sleep.
That's why it does.
And after a while, I was like, what is going on with you? Like, it's literally 7 p.m. And it's like, oh, sorry. Like, Anthropic like Jeff is me. Yeah. So, to, you know, if you're talking about something serious, and I think it's late. Like,
right.
You
but
know,
I would love like a completely jailbroken, best of breed, open source
fully
model.
Local.
That'd be great.
Fully, local is fine. It doesn't have to be in a nice package. It doesn't have to be local, actually.
But what are you, doing where the jailbreak is so important? Because like,
well, there are a couple of things where it does stop you or crotch you or try to correct you. You see that, right? There are a whole bunch where you don't see it, where it is successfully keeping you away from whatever you want to know.
But you can always just switch to GLM 5.2 and it'll just do it.
No, but so like
if you
go ask it any question about race, gender, immigration, mental health, doctor advice, legal advice.
So like, I guess I don't see why you need a harness for this, right? Like, for me, I'm using harness and I'm using agents because it's going out and doing things. Right?
I have to say harness to like just I just want the
harness
model
matter.
By harness.
By harness,
I just mean like I want it maxed out. I don't want any excuse for like why my open source model is even slightly worse than it could be. I want it operating. I want the best open source model configured in the best way, and it just tells me the truth all the time. Because I used to go to Grok for that, but even Grok is a little neutered.
you know,
it's not like...
Elon's talked about this.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah. People pointed out, like, some of the bias. He was like, oh, geez. And we wanted it to just be real, and it was giving neoliberal answers.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, edited, right? I'm dying to talk about what you said the other day, but I also don't know if you want to say it
what
publicly.
Is it?
The entire, everything's probably hacked. It's probably already hacked.
Oh, no, I'll talk about it.
Okay.
So the question is like, where are the open source models catching up?
Right.
And so there's a couple of different theories, and I'll just lay out the theories that I know and the evidence for them, but I don't have a point of view yet.
I mean, it's possible that these are true.
So there's some of it that's obviously, you know, the Chinese are doing their own pre-training. They have their own compute. They have their own data sets. In fact, they can crawl more of the data sets because they're less bound by copyright laws, right? So they can crawl YouTube and Reddit and all that stuff. And they train these models. That's like the base model, right? Then there's like the accusations that Anthropic made, which is that they're distilling our models, which is they're querying our models en masse, taking that data, using
the
train
model. I mean, if I were China, that's what I would do.
For sure. And that's creating a jagged intelligence kind of model. And definitely some of that is going on, but I think it's rich of Anthropic to call that out when Anthropic crawled the open web and distilled the open web.
Sure.
That's all these AIs are, right? In fact, one platform that I think would be very popular if the government were to do it, is to say, hey, you guys, since you trained on the open web, if you trained on the open web and open data, you have to open your model after X months, after 12 months or something, right? That seems to me like a pretty fair thing to say, especially like open AI, you have to be, otherwise you have to be actually open AI, right? And Anthropic, you're the one talking doom and gloom and you're building God, but you're not going to keep God in a leash for yourself, Dario. We don't want like a priest you know, controlling God for the rest of us and interpreting the Bible for the rest of time. So I think that would be popular things. Okay, so anyway, number one, they have their own pre-training, but they get the full corpus of the web. They don't have to obey any copyright laws, right? Second, they are distilling the existing American models, which are starting to get more locked down, and a lot of this government nationalization control helps them be locked down. But, you know, there are data brokers online that are taking, like, Claude Max accounts and reselling tokens from that in an API format to end users of, like, 80% off. Because those plans are heavily subsidized for end users. They charge the enterprises.
It's like $8,000 a month
and,
retail.
And as anyone who's like run like an exchange or a regulated online brokerage knows that KYC is a dime a dozen. People get back KYC all the time. They like print passports in Vietnam if you want, right?
Yeah,
exactly. So I think the distillation is going to be hard to stop. But I think the biggest one to think about, and there's some genuine algorithmic breakthroughs, like the DeepSeek paper.
R1. That was systems. Incredible systems.
Very, very smart people. And I would guess, just by looking at the numbers of resumes and so on, that the majority of mathematicians and researchers in AI today are Chinese. Like, they produce more STEM graduates, more PhDs in the relevant fields, more Olympiad winners than anybody else, right? So, and then a lot of the US staff is Chinese. So in fact, that's why I tweeted, like, AI is our Chinese against their Chinese, right? And these guys, and I don't think there's any conspiracy required. These guys are all just friends. You know, they live in the same dorms. They went to the same schools. They live in the same buildings and apartments. They hang out. Yeah. And they switch jobs like crazy. And not just the Chinese. You see everyone's hopping from lab to lab to lab, and they're just taking data with them. Okay, so there's all of that going on, right? But then on top of it, I don't think that the AI companies have the security profile of a top U.S. national secure compartment facility, right? They do not know how to protect secrets. So of course they're getting hacked. Of course the weights are getting leaked. And if you're Chinese or anybody else, you're not going to like just take the weights and release them back. You're going to use that to distill at high speed and train your own model, right? Or to augment your model. So I think there's another whole system right there that's going on. And the last one, actually, I think the biggest one is none of those. I think no conspiracy is required for the following. If you look at where China is, they're like, okay, we're behind. They've always been behind in software. The US has been way ahead in software. And being ahead in software allows you to extract all the margins, because for the longest time, VCs never invested in hardware. Why? Because hardware is a commodity business. Right, and software had the network effects, the lock-in. Software's art, as Patrick Collison said, it locks you in. And so people want to invest in software. So even in the US, whenever you get a hardware company funded, the VCs will always ask you, well, what's the software lock-in? What's the software piece, right? And so this is why, like
changing.
I used to say, yeah, hardware is the moat that buys you time to build a software castle, right? But guess what? Claude Code burned software down. Software was eating the world and AI ate software. So now software is commoditized.
Yeah.
The moment you can specify it, an AI can one-shot it or two-shot it or get to it within a couple of
YC
shots.
YC went from like 5% to about 25% hardware, 20 to 25% hardware batch to batch.
But hardware
now
is also commoditized by China. Any hardware I can make here, you can make in China more cheaply and more easily. The whole ecosystem is there. Shenzhen has like 3,000 manufacturers of this tiny little cable all in one
Thanks,
little area.
Thanks, Nixon, for normalizing relations with China and taking us off the dollar standard or the gold standard.
And so bringing reshoring manufacturing back to the U.S. is going to take a full generation. It should be done, no question. I'm a big fan of American manufacturing, but it's going to take a long time. In the meantime, China outproduces every one of the supply chains because they realize there are scale economies in production. So they subsidize the thing up front. Then they become the global supplier. They drive everybody else out of business. And then they control the whole supply chain across these critical industries. So they own hardware. No one's going to beat China on hardware in the next decade. It'll ramp up. We'll fight on a bunch of fronts, but they own hardware. So they like the commoditization of software. So when software is getting commoditized, that helps China. So if you're the Chinese government, you're basically funding all these labs. You're doing kind of a public-private partnership where you're saying, don't worry, you don't have to make money. You can be number two or number three. Just open it so the other labs can learn from you and we can catch up and keep up. And if the software is commoditized, then we win on the hardware. So the way I think about it today is that hardware is commoditized, but it's owned by China for the most part. There are some few exceptions like SpaceX in the US. Software is commoditized. So what's not commoditized? It's actually just AI research. Developing, working on AI itself is the new software engineering. The problem with that is that software used to be democratized. Everyone could compete. John Carmack and John Romero sitting there with a small team could code up Doom and Quake and compete against EA and Activision and so on. Can't do that in AI. AI takes massive resources, huge GPU clusters, you know, small numbers of researchers, massive data sets, proprietary data sets. So in that, and then now regulatory capture. So it seems like all the value, all the choke points are going into AI, and that's controlled by a very small number of companies. And ironically, the only thing keeping us afloat is a Chinese government subsidizing the whole thing on open source so that their hardware can stay competitive.
Yeah, I mean, I think the...
Plus they have the weights. No, I'm kidding.
Well, they might. Use that as...
You can sneak about on one USB stick. Are you telling me that hasn't already been done?
You need physical access. Like, you need one person on the inside. Like, there's so many people...
By the way, every male AI founder is walking around with a beautiful Chinese girlfriend. Have we talked about that? Like, no one talks about that. Go walk outside Silicon Valley, right?
I think we all come from a world where advantages like had some durability and you could actually operationalize your advantage against the rest of the world, but that's just like narrowing down in time. So, you know, you might have the smartest model, but what are you going to do with it in 2 weeks, in 3-4 weeks until somebody else has it too? So I think there's a different part of the game theory that we've not experienced before, which is the time contraction of any of these advantages. And I don't think it makes it harder to predict who's going to be in charge of anything because, like you said, a few months later, the smartest model is now open source.
Guys, I'm so fucking worried.
This is one of my tweets I'm prouder of a couple of years back. I said, soon everybody will have AI anxiety.
Yeah,
like, we're all feeling it.
Yeah.
We're all feeling AI anxious, right? It's incredibly...
Oh, I'm jubilant. I am AI jubilant.
But it's both, right? Yeah. It's the anxiety in its good form is kind of FOMO-ish, which is like, look at all the great things I can do. Don't worry about me, guys.
Yeah, but like everyone I know that's working at Frontier Labs, like on these things that are researchers, they're like depressed.
They are?
Yeah. They're stressed out because they think it's going to kill us all.
Well, that's because they're
culture. Why would it kill us?
The first ones I met in 2021 were saying to me that they were putting off having kids or thinking about not having kids because they were afraid for the kids' future. And I was like, what are you talking about?
As opposed to every other time in human history when people were never afraid of their kids' future and so they didn't have any kids.
Wait, so why is this not just going to result in Star Trek the Next Generation? Like, that's my hope.
So
the bullshit part about Star Trek The Next Generation is that they have AGI, clearly.
Yes.
But that AGI is somehow not running things.
I mean, they couldn't conceive of it yet, right?
They have the holodeck, but somehow people are still going about
their
business.
Isn't that good enough a writer?
Not just living in the holodeck.
There's plenty of science fiction that's, you know, bothered to... see that idea further through.
I mean, some large percentage of the San Francisco population has been one-shotted by fentanyl. You don't think the holodeck will take out the rest?
Right. They just don't show that on the show. Like, Gene Roddenberry, like, I'm sure he conceived of it.
Yeah,
and
it would just
be too much of a bummer to show, like, these giant holodeck, you know, so, I mean,
you say this and wireheading. You're living in Star Trek in your mind and you're happy.
Yeah,
that's true.
You're excited for it. And it's like, but yes, you recognize there's a ton of terrible things that are going to happen.
Right.
And you're just like, oh. It wasn't in Star Trek.
Well, it's
no, but you're blowing my dreams over here, Daniel.
But to Gary's defense, like there's been so much shit. Electricity, like that was a big one, right? Railroads, the cars. These were big changes.
You used to have to ride a horse across, like the Pony Express. Yeah. Do you remember that? That was insane.
And people
I don't remember.
But the more, the more rapid the change, the more influential the displaced, the more tumultuous it was. And so now we're having a very rapid change. We're displacing white collar. We're displacing government. We're displacing managers. We're displacing academics. We're displacing journalists. You know, I learn more from AI than I did in my college for classes because I can sit there and I can have it meet me at my exact level of knowledge. Because they give that to me visually. Give me a graph about that. I can ask dumb questions. I don't understand that. Explain it again. Explain it again. Explain it a third different way. Explain it visually. Explain it audibly. Explain it with dancing elves. I don't care. Like, just to keep going over until I get it. I could not do that in class. I can learn so much better. I just have to care.
Yeah.
Right? If I care, I can learn anything better than with any tutor, better than with any teacher. People are obsolete, and they're going to lead a revolution.
Well, no,
right?
those people need to want more things. And if you want more things...
Well, we want unlimited things, which is great.
That's the good news. The good news is, like, everyone wants more things.
Wants are unlimited.
And then if you have this tool and you're not averse to using it, this is why I'm so against, like, sorry to bring up the AI writing thing again, but like, I understand, like, that makes sense, humans, and like, there is a disrespectful aspect when you do bad writing, right? But like, that presupposes that, like, the AI can't write well.
Okay,
that's a fair point
because now the writing is voluminous.
It's like bad.
giant, like, it takes a little thing like prompt you give it. Well, okay, but here's the thing.
Yes.
You're giving it a prompt, right?
Yes.
Why don't you just send me the prompt? Why do I need to read all the garbage that the AI spits
because it has
out?
To draw on, like, all of human experience.
No, no, just give me the prompt. Yeah, I have an AI on this side. Right. Just send me the prompt.
I mean, that might happen.
I'll send it to my AI. That is how it happens.
I have my codecs put together a markdown file that I send to my developers that they can give to their Claude code to go execute something that I want.
This is the prompt. Go do it.
Don't talk to me. Have your agent talk to my agent.
That's literally what it is.
My thing will just file an issue on your GitHub repo. And then
what I want to do is I want to get on the Zoom, and I'm on the Zoom having a conversation, and then 10 minutes in, I know this is not for me.
Yeah.
And then I just hit a button, and the agent takes over. Agent Naval keeps talking, and I go after the next one.
Yeah.
I swipe right on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then the joke's on me because you were never there to begin with. Yeah.
I think it's time for politics.
Politics.
Yeah. Politics.
Sounded like it's been politics most of the time.
Maybe let's start with
fear mongering.
Politics doesn't matter because of AI.
You know,
that's not true. What are you talking about?
Everything's going to end. Nothing that's like politically relevant right now is going to be relevant in 3 years.
I will say that
it's going to get. I wish I could vote for an AI. Their job.
I wish I could vote for an AI to represent us.
Gary
will make it.
Chinese open source.
Somebody
AI,
can make it.
Dario's
they can.
AI,
they can
Sam's
open
AI,
source
Elon's
it. They
AI.
Can put the weights out for us to take a look
you can
at.
Read the weights. You can look at the weights. And
no, I mean,
like,
not personally.
Hey, that weight
like
looks off to me.
But like a fully transparent AI that is running
There's
for
no such
office.
Thing. They had this thing, a whole field called mechanistic interpretability, where they're trying to figure out how the AI thinks, and they've like made very little progress.
Oh, sure. I'm not saying we're going to know, but I'm just saying you have access to the same thing.
AIs are not legible. By the way, it's an anachronism. Our training data is in natural language and in computer languages that humans can read and write. And so the AIs are trained on that. But in the future, the AIs will develop their own languages. They'll communicate with each other in some kind of a binary high-speed protocol. They'll almost be talking compiled code or maybe even something completely different that we can't even imagine, which will be more efficient for communication. It's only humans who demand the legibility, but the AIs don't really have it. And part of what makes AI systems so much better than human-coded expert systems is that they don't have to be legible. So they can find correlations and patterns that we cannot articulate. In fact, even most of our knowledge is inarticulatable. Most of your feelings are inarticulatable. You don't even know half the time what you're feeling or thinking. You're not even
the other
really
half. You're hallucinating.
Let's talk about our feelings.
Yeah. Let's do that. We're experts in that. One place where we are experts.
GLM 5.2. I'll vote for GLM 5.2 for office. Yeah.
They're Chinese overlords.
Hey, it's my favorite distillation of fable.
I really do appreciate how the Chinese are making all the open source models out there. It's kind of pathetic that the U.S. just
C-Dance is amazing.
The global economy will appreciate it.
C-Dance is probably the global leader in video, right?
It's
the best video model.
Yeah.
So in some places, actually, that's an interesting point about open source. In some cases now, open source is number one.
Yeah.
And at least historically, like if you look at things like Linux or other open source projects, once something open source kind of gets in the lead, it rarely surrenders it. And that's because an ecosystem springs up around it where everyone starts plugging into, especially in enterprise use cases. So right now, Claude and Codex are like slightly ahead of GLM, Fable and maybe a lot ahead of GLM. But if something like a GLM were ever to surpass them, it's not clear they'd get a lead back.
I mean, because how can you rationalize your limited resources at a company going into something that open source is winning at? You have to do something with your resources, and failing to catch up to open source with your precious resources is not a good use of them.
You'd have a clock. Like, so if you're OpenAI or Anthropic, you would have a certain amount of revenue and money and cash in the bank and investor backing, and you would have to use that to sort of jump meaningfully ahead of the open source and take the lead again before that runs out. So that's an because like if you look at the AI race, you know, 2 years ago people thought that Google and Elon and Meta were also competitors.
There were five kings. There's two kings now.
And why is that? Well, it's not just because those guys have the best models. OpenAI and Anthropic are the only ones that are A, making revenue off of their models directly. And so they're not cross-subsidizing from other business. They're not running out of cash. They're actually pouring the cash back in. And the second is because they have very active user bases, and now a lot of the improvement is coming through reinforcement learning. They're getting the guidance and the trajectories to improve the models. And so they're just pulling away. And maybe Elon, because he took SpaceX public and he's got that war chest, he gets maybe one more bite at the apple. Plus he's got the data centers in space. So, you know, don't bet against Elon. Google, I think, has lost it.
That's quite sad.
It's really amazing what happened.
I was always like bearish on Google. I was tweeting some pretty anti-Google management stuff back in the day, where I was like, I will know they're serious about AI.
Gemini 3.1 Pro was the moment. That was as good as it was going to get.
No, but it wasn't.
I still think 2.5 Pro was better.
It wasn't good enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was. They never even got the basic app working. I remember I tried to upgrade to pay them $20 a month. It was a nightmare. Yeah. This huge runaround.
It's crazy.
No, no, you need to be part of Google One. No, no, you need Google Workspace account.
They were
no,
first
check,
to have
contact
million
your
token
admin.
Usable contacts.
Yeah,
sure.
Briefly.
It was very cool.
Right.
It
and
was
then
cool.
Every time, even today, the iOS app, which I know it's not their platform, but everyone else seems to figure it out. You put a query into Gemini, you background, it always loses the connection. It just drops it. Whereas all the others will just run in the background. How hard is that? It's 2026. Run a background app, guys.
gRPC.
Just need a little bit more Sparta over there. Meta might be too much
Sparta
right now.
I think it's too late.
I think
for
they
Meta.
Have to kill 5,000 Google PMs. Like, that's the only way. It's PM slop. The whole company's PM slop at this point, right? Like, anywhere you go, it's just like, tons of products overlapping. It's a huge mess. You can't figure your way through the maze.
It's an incentive problem now. All the best people want stock in OpenAI and Anthropic, or they want to be sitting alongside the best colleagues in OpenAI and Anthropic, or they want the data set from OpenAI and Anthropic. And they certainly don't want to be tied down by all the PMs and all the legacy BS. And they should have replaced Google Search, Google AI a long time ago. I don't even look at the results anymore. I just look at the Google AI
results. Here's an alternative vision, which is like Google today could... they probably have all the transcripts of all the meetings, or if they don't, they should have it.
And they have all your emails.
Right. And then they probably need to use Anthropic Fable 5 or whatever, because like their own models are not quite good enough. But you could diarize all of these. You could have like, you know, a markdown file for every single employee at Google. And you could compute a score.
Which you've cleverly trademarked and patented.
That's right.
Google Brain.
Running through GStack, of course.
Yeah.
Google.io.
No, anyway.
Google Omni is the best for...
Google Gary has a price. It's 7%.
So, it's standard. It's just standard.
It's normal. It's just normal.
Seriously, you could solve it. Like, if someone was a true, like, really wanted to fix this... Like, all of these things are just systems problems, right?
Yeah,
you can have a score.
But it would take Larry and Sergey walking in there, and literally, it's like that scene from Entourage when Ari Gold walks back in the office and is shooting people. Like,
but only with their open claws.
And live ammunition.
Like, I'm serious. Like, they don't need to be there physically. Like, you know, one of the things I learned from Pedro at Brex, like, that's how he runs Brex. Like, you know, he has total information awareness on, like, every team. And
didn't they lose to Ramp?
I mean,
I'm kidding.
The ramp guys come in.
Look, man, I don't have any skin in the game on either of those, okay?
We're accepting sponsorships from whoever calls in first.
Whoever pays us more, we'll talk up.
He really did, like, instrument the CEO brain, like, for him. Like, it's his personal claw that knows, like, the KPIs and literally what all of his directs talk about in those meetings. And it's significant.
So he's spying on them all the time?
I mean, yes. No, I mean, the thing is, like, I mean, they're not the only company. Like, I've talked to other CEOs. They don't publicly talk about this. Behind closed door, this is, like, the max thing that you could do is, like, concentrate the power in your CEO or co-founding team so you have actual awareness of what the fuck is going on.
Well, the reality is the team should be much smaller.
Right.
And most of your employees are GPUs working the data center.
I mean,
of course, if you can have 10 fewer, 10 to, like a tenth of your employees right now and just make them the 100X guys, then that's massive.
Well, that's easier said than done. Like most people, most CEOs do not want to fire 50 to 80% of their people.
But there should be a lot more small
I've been
companies.
On boards where it's like, bro, like we're fucked and we need to fire 80% of the people and you have a shot. Like you literally
but you don't
have
know which 80%.
Like tens of millions of dollars
part
in
the
bank.
Part of the problem
still.
Is you don't know which 80%.
Well,
you're working through managers.
Now you can get
the visibility.
And that's not a little thing.
That's
a big fucking thing. Like you can have total information. Like, okay, like this is a big thing to me.
Right.
I think that the future is essentially that like you need to ride the fucking AGI. Like you actually need to. Like the most significant thing to me is like, the 1 million token context window is a big deal. It's like, I mean, I talk about it as like 3 Harry Potter books. But guess what? Like a human being can keep in their brain. Fucking 7 things plus or minus 3.
Right, right.
Like we are little monkey brains.
Yeah.
Like we talk about like super intelligence is like in the future. Fuck that. Super intelligence right now, like an agent working for you can literally make a 1,000 pages like printed, valuable, useful, credible, legible.
Let's not talk about AI writing.
Yeah, it's
not a writing thing.
It's an ideas thing. You know,
it's like you can understand what the fuck is happening in your org. Like every CEO in the world, like really.
So you could have your AI say tie into all the systems in the entire company, evaluate everything, and tell me which 20% to fire right now.
I mean, you could do that, and you should.
That's like the easiest thing in the world
what
right
do you
now.
Think about
but no one will do it. No one's doing it.
We haven't talked about Zuck's project at Meta.
Plus, it's not perfect.
Do you know anything about this?
I mean, only what I read is like, I mean, half of the smart people I knew at Meta have left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry. Like, I really like Meta. You know, like, you guys are great. But like, it's also like, what the fuck?
I think it's become a sweatshop.
I don't think you can build a culture or morale by just buying people, especially from all different stripes and places and ramming them together. Then you'd have no idea how many are actually missionaries, how many are mercenaries. Culture is a real thing that takes time to evolve and grow.
Meta, of all places, needs to do what I just described, which is like, someone has to actually know what is actually happening per person, per team. And you can do this now, right? But you also have to tune it. Like, there has to be a rating. It's like, what is actually a good employee? What is their behavior? What are their characteristics? Like, you can actually tune your culture right now.
I mean, it's taking the whole engineering team and turning them into data labelers. Right. It's just like, it's like dropping a nuclear bomb in the place.
So
like,
that seems indiscriminate to me, right? Like, why would you do that? Especially because you have this incredibly fine-grained thing. Like, you have a prompt, you have a skill file, you have like a bunch of markdown, like you can actually tune it to exactly the output.
I think their org is just too large.
Yes.
It's the same problem as Google. When you have a large org, you do things that actually make sense in certain domains, then it gets leaked to the press, gets sensationalized. Yeah. Oh, they're turning everyone to data laborers. Probably you just have too many people. You have too many cooks in the kitchen.
But
you need
like way less than what you can fit in 3 Harry Potter books.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
so
I mean, I'm sorry to like bring that up, but like, I think that this is like a
millennial example you could give.
Sorry. I don't know.
Read another book.
Yes.
Well, I think the big scary question is, will there still be a startup ecosystem? Because on the one hand, you're shrinking the size of the firm. People are more leveraged. That should mean more startups, small teams can do more great, fantastic.
Yeah. We're definitely seeing that. I mean, people can get to 100 mil ARR. Like, not raise a B.
But doing what? Selling software.
Yeah.
And software is getting completely commoditized.
Yeah,
like all these legal guys, like Harvey and whatever, like, it's a good test. Like, wouldn't Claude just basic Mythos or Fable just do a better job than something trained specifically on legal, especially with tool use?
It depends, because it depends on whether or not the frontier labs stay open for their best models, or do they close them?
I think anyone who pays them enough, they'll find a way to be open. So if a law firm will pay them the best result, like
that's not a given. It is possible for Anthropic to say, like, actually Fable 6.
I would bet my business they're not going to enter my vertical. I think if they can enter your vertical without a custom model, they'll do it.
That's
and I think one of the bitter lessons here is that the general models beat the specialized ones.
Yes.
They don't have to enter it. It's just going to, people are
automatic.
Use it.
Yeah, exactly.
To obviate that market, not because they're OpenAI legal app, right?
Right.
It's just because it's so much.
It's just like, why would I use something special?
Why would I pay $5,000 a month for some other SaaS company?
I think that like 2027 will be the year of the AI harness war. Is it going to be Codex? Is it going to be CoWork / Claude Code? Is it going to be OpenClaw, Hermes? Is it going to, like, what is it? You know, who's like, what harness are people going to use day to day for everything?
Yeah. Right now, so a lot of Silicon Valley after 2007 got to exist because you had two mobile phone providers. You had Apple and you had Google. If you had only one, if Android didn't exist in the ecosystem, it would have been a much tougher position for startups. You would have been facing a kind of a true monopolist at the end of that chain or the top of that chain. Right now, you at least have two horses fighting each other, right? So they kind of force each other to behave a little bit. If it boils down to just one, it's a very bad situation for startups.
Well, then they'd nationalize it, and then maybe we could get the government to...
Do they really nationalize it? They didn't nationalize Google. They didn't nationalize Apple.
This is way bigger.
It depends on how bad it gets. I mean, like, search, it's a good utility. Like, there are lots of reasons.
And if you nationalize it, it might slow down and lose because now the DMV is running it, and China wins.
Right.
It's not like the Chinese are asleep. There's an ASML machine supposedly somewhere in China now. Mm-hmm. You hear about that? Howard Litnick called the ASML and was all mad because an ASML machine somehow leaked into China. That's the lithography machine. There's only 184 of them.
That's our soapworms escaping.
Yeah. And then on top of it, they're developing, their Huawei chips. They're working on their 7-nanometer, 5-nanometer, whatever processes. They're building their fabs. They're working on it. They're not dumb. I mean, you've got 1.4 billion people there. You've got a lot of STEM PhDs. They have a lot of national pride. They can redirect capital. I'm not saying it matches up to innovation. in a free market economy. But the U.S. is ahead because we have created this very thin layer where we take the absolute best and brightest from all over the world and we incent them like crazy to compete with each other. And then we collect the rewards from that. And Silicon Valley actually disproportionately collects the rewards, and California collects the rewards, and it's not really spread out to the rest of the country as much. The rest of the country is scared shitless now. But that's it. That's the thin blue line standing between, you know, the so-called free world and the Chinese competition. Now, I'll actually take a radical point of view. I don't think we're in competition with China. I don't see the competition. Taiwan, I mean, every Taiwanese person I talk to doesn't want to fight. You know, the rich people in Taiwan are busy dodging the draft by taking their kids out of the country. You know, there's some rule in Taiwan that, like,
mandatory service.
It's mandatory conscription, but if your kid has spent, I don't know the numbers, but something like 3 months a year for the last 5 years out of the country, then they're not eligible for the draft anymore, or no more mandatory conscription. So every rich person is always taking their kids for 3 months a year out of the, they have like a standard system doing it. They're not interested in fighting. The second largest political party there, the Kuomintang, is very pro-China. So it's already very compromised. They are, most people in Taiwan are thinking they're going to go like Hong Kong. They're going to get rich in the process. They're going to gateway to China. And then one or two generations later, they'll assimilate. And how the heck is the U.S. going to defend Taiwan? Like, aircraft carriers are dead. Land-based missiles from China can take out aircraft carriers. Drones. DJI is the largest defense contractor in the world. It's like us trying to, like, it's like China trying to defend the Florida Keys from us.
Yeah.
You know, it's ridiculous. The whole concept is ridiculous. So, and you saw we just went through with Iran. How do you think we'd run out of missiles in like 7 days? We don't have the manufacturing base. Now, maybe Anduril and Saronic and others get there and build all of that up. But that's a long ways off. So I mean, I think the Chinese know that, and I think the Taiwanese know that, and I think everyone's trying to save face while, like, over 10, 20 years, Taiwan slowly reunites with China. And outside of that, we don't really have a beef with China. You know, okay, Japan, whatever, you know, North Korea's got a South Korea issue, but it's not in our backyard. One of the big problems the U.S. is facing is that we've been in a low-growth, high-inflation environment for a while. Now maybe growth is picking back up, but so is inflation. And people are fighting over the spoils. There will be democratic socialists coming up, you know, the billionaire's tax, the wealth tax, the socialists trying to seize the means of production. You know, Mom Donny doing rings around the democratic establishment, and they're talking about the eradication of Western civilization. People, you got to put food on the table. You got to make people feel good. You got to make people feel like they're not going to go jobless. You got to feed them. And picking a war with China just seems like the stupidest thing to do. Now, we should have the appropriate tariffs against them if they have tariffs against us. If they subsidize their businesses, especially in network effect or scale economies, to compete with us, then we should also have our own barriers, because you got to protect your local industry so it doesn't get snuffed out. So you at least have a fighting chance, because these things do have economies of scale. It's not as simple as David Ricardo said, where it's just like, oh yeah, I'm selling bananas and you're selling watermelons and we can just trade. No, because the guy who gets better at doing something gets really good at doing it and then can do it very, very cheaply, or he gets a network effect around either an ecosystem or an actual lock-in where new users create value for existing users. So you can't have that simplistic of a mindset. You do have to play on an even playing field. You have to make sure the currencies are aligned, no one's subsidizing, et cetera, et cetera. But that said, there's no reason for us to go to war with China. There really isn't.
But is Taiwan like it, or is it like control the South China Sea? It's like
why do we need to control the South China Sea?
So like, okay, so the world breaks in half.
The world's already broken into many pieces.
I know, but like right now, our ships go through there and it's fine, right? But like the world literally
breaks
in half.
Why would they stop our ships from going through there if they're carrying, you know, trade goods back and forth?
Like, who knows why they might want to do that? We have a rule that's like, you know, the rule of the sea is that we can freely pass wherever we want.
There is no we have a civil war going on internally in this country, in case you haven't noticed. It's nationalists versus communists. Like, everyone is going more radical on both sides.
I mean, it might be fine if the world breaks in half and China controls Asia. Right. And it's like
China
to get our
does,
ships through.
China,
sometimes they charge
China
us things
does
and stuff
control,
like that, maybe.
China does control most of East Asia. And to the extent that it does not, it is up to Japan and South Korea and others to look out for their interests, and they can ally with the U.S. But we're not going to get into a shooting war with China over interests in the South Pacific Sea.
Oh, we would never do that. But we will sail a ship through there and they'll hit it.
Why would they hit our ship going through there? If they run a ship through the Panama Canal,
we're very good at getting our ships in.
No, but if they put a ship through the Panama Canal, why would we attack it? If it's a legal trade vessel carrying goods and services back and forth from the U.S. that we're trading on,
incentivized to do any of that to each other.
Yeah,
I think right now China actually cares way less about this stuff than we think. China's very internally focused. Like the CCP is internally focused.
Exactly.
Yeah. They
want to stay in charge of their empire, and you know I'm not a fan of communists or the Communist Party, although I think CCP resembles more of a capitalist fascist organization. The communist is a veneer, right? Yeah, fascist in the sense of like it's like the nation uniting for a common cause.
They
right?
are
but it's run by a party. Yeah,
they're very good at making money.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
They're not only that, they're actually pretty hyper competent, which actually
they're
like,
very
makes
competent.
You, if you compare it to like the California government, it's disastrous.
It's high IQ and homogenous.
Right.
Right.
So, when you look at high speed rail, it's like. Guys, they just change the SQL laws.
I mean,
like,
Mark Andreessen is saying,
why
it's time to build. It's time to build. No one's building. There's a few of us building in Silicon Valley, but we're even building ethereal things that are scaring
the populace. I want their communists instead of our communists.
Yeah, that's
we'll
true.
We'll just send ours over there, but they're like, no, we don't want these guys. Not so good.
What they call them, Baizu? Like
Baizu.
Yeah, what does that mean again?
It means white and left.
White and left, yeah. And it's kind of a derogatory look-down term. They're effeminate or stupid or something like that.
I mean, all of the above, I mean, that's how I think of them.
Yeah, exactly. Centrist Democrat, everybody.
I'm a centrist Democrat.
Centrist Democrat. San Francisco, baby.
Yeah. I feel like you're wearing it. You're like, please don't eat me, sir.
No, I mean, look at San Francisco. Like, it's, you know,
San Francisco is on the rebound.
We're gonna run the table on the supervisor seats at least. You know, like,
yeah, but the
possible.
Problem is that LA is sinking.
Yes,
LA has sank. Hollywood got
New
chased
York
out of
is
LA.
Insane. Like, it's insane.
Yeah, this is not a problem. This is an opportunity. All my friends in New York are gonna come back to San Francisco.
This is the problem. California has a monopoly on all the warm, dry coastline, all the Mediterranean land in the United States, which is the most powerful empire in the world. So it's the most powerful, it's the best land in the world, all in one state. There should be five or six different states that compete with each other.
30-50% of the GDP of the United States will concentrate in California
but also
in the next
arable
5 years.
Land, the beautiful coastline, the good weather. It's a curse of geography. They've got all the natural resources, right? It's like basically southern Italy or France or even better, but in the U.S., and it's all in one freaking state. California is this weird direct democracy thing, which is the worst idea ever.
I mean, the governorship, for instance, is not that bad.
50.1% can vote anything, and they just read a headline. And they're like, free food for cats and dogs for everyone. Great, we'll vote for it. Eat the rich.
Look, Steyer couldn't get in there, right?
Yeah.
You know, basically, like, we actually have two relatively centrist options for governor, which
is
good.
Amazing how
which
that
is amazing.
Out.
That's great. Like, I like that, right? So...
I think all these communist experiments will fail everywhere. Like they failed in San Francisco, they're going to fail in New York.
I don't agree.
I don't think they'll fail.
The difference with San Francisco is demographics are destiny, and the demographics of New York, and the demographics of LA, and the demographics of Chicago are just firmly committed to that cause. And the worse it gets, the more they'll vote for it. It's like Venezuela; they're going to vote all the way down. And there is no one out there to fly in and arrest the next Maduro. It has to be solved internally. The United States is the last bastion for freedom. Even the COVID unlocks, the lockdowns would not have lifted if you didn't have militiamen start marching around the red states and purple states, carrying M16s and AR-15s past the state houses, being like, we're done with the lockdowns. And then the lockdowns came up. The whole world would have been lockdowns. The
Second
whole
Amendment
world,
works, baby.
Yeah, the whole world would be in lockdowns for 6 or 12 months longer if it weren't for the 40 million intransigent Americans who have guns. And everybody likes to hate on them and everybody likes to shit on them, but they guard your freedom. Yeah, freedom ain't free. You need those people out there, right? And so, look, if the U.S. were to collapse, first of all, I think freedom bleeds out from the rest of the world. You can already see what's happening in Australia and UK with the speech laws and the censorship and all that, and the weird arrests and so on. But if the U.S. degenerates and falls, it doesn't fail like Europe did, or even Europe isn't failing that well these days either, but it doesn't become like a big retirement home and a museum where everyone's on good social welfare for a while. It fails like a Latin American country fails, because it is bordered by Latin America. So you got a lot of people who want to get in here, and they will get in here. So you're looking at much more like cartel and drugs and crime and violence and those kinds of institutions. So
okay, white pill, robotics.
No, you're right. Technology.
I don't want to do UBI. We should do UBR.
UBR is good.
We need to have universal basic robot. Everyone should have a robot, and the robot should cook for you, pick up your shit.
The good and the bad news is that the robotics boosters say it's two, three years away. The robotics skeptics say it's 5 to 10 years away. No one thinks it's impossible.
Yeah.
And so we already have self-driving robots, self-driving cars.
I think
right?
we can make people really happy if they have a better life. Like they aren't, you know, I mean, who likes to clean their toilet bowl? Nobody.
But, right, right. You know, no, and unless you can a lot have, of the issues around
you have
immigration,
a robot do it. It's
relieve
great.
You yeah. of this if you vote yeah, yeah. for centrist Democrats.
Yes.
No. Well, a lot of the immigration and a lot of the taxation issues are happening because the boomers are retiring. There aren't enough people below them to take care of them. They're voting themselves lots of benefits. There's not enough money left in Social Security. The population is shrinking. So a smaller number of workers are carrying a larger number of these guys. So they're saying, okay, we'll just sell the country and retire.
This is the path. We need centrist Democrats who are pro-technology, who are abundant. Oriented.
Okay, but to play devil's advocate for a second, like healthcare, 90% of healthcare is wasted. It's not
robots.
Even stuff people. It's not even stuff people need. No, but it's like how much of healthcare goes into like keeping you alive for the last 2 weeks,
right?
That's not really.
I can fix this with Markdown Files, okay?
Okay, but and then education is just like a big LARP. Anyone who
That's
wants
also
to be educated
Markdown Files.
Can go educate themselves right now with AI. Educate themselves right now with all the open source courseware and all that stuff. They just want the stamp and they want to go to college and they want to hang out in idyllic paradise for 4 years and. They want to protest for social justice and they just want to chill with their friends and party and get paid for it.
Yeah.
It's already UBI.
You said a very important
college
thing.
College is already
which is
UBI.
Like, the college is not about the actual act of learning. It's about like being in a room with a certain set of people who like have the right networks.
Correct.
Right?
It's socializing, it's babysitting, it's credentialism. There's just a tiny bit of education sprinkled in for a few STEM degrees and
then
maybe
you go
medicine
after a bunch of bullshit jobs.
To legitimize it. Yeah. And then there's all the social sciences and politics.
Okay, how about this?
Sciences.
We don't want more bullshit jobs. Yeah. We want better bullshit jobs.
Okay.
Like, I mean, why
That's true. That's true. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, why can't we just, instead of like going to a cubicle and like break your brain and do a bunch of bullshit, like being an investment banker or something.
I think we're all going to end up being plumbers and electricians and cutting hair. All the white collar stuff is just going to collapse into nothing.
No, I don't think so.
Because it's just eating more and more.
No,
don't you see how this is going? Everything's going to be gone.
There's a good version of this where people don't have to have just a shitty manual jobs. They can actually be handling and guiding the robots and the AIs. And so if we don't get ASI, if AI gets you to expert level, but doesn't go beyond, still needs human guidance, taste, and creativity, humans are still the motivated things in the environment. And so people become like Pokemon trainers. You're like robot handlers, right? AI handlers. And you use that to accelerate. And that's, to the truth of it, that's what we're seeing today. The people who are using AI today are more productive than ever. They are not being displaced. The only reason you're being displaced by an AI is because you refuse to use the AI. If you're using the AI, you have more work than ever.
I mean, the one thing you can't replace is human desire. Even if robots have their own desires, they cannot replace human desire. So as long as humans have desires and there are AIs and robots that can help fulfill them, then you always need humans in the loop. And you'll always have
The moment I find out I'm talking to an AI or I'm reading the work of an AI or I'm even looking at art created by an AI, I'm completely uninterested. Assuming it's completely done by an AI. Now,
I disagree.
Cool. It's like, hold on.
Like, wait a second. That's just because it's shitty right now. I guarantee you it will be indistinguishable and it will be very, very good.
I don't agree.
I think even
if it is indistinguishable, the moment I know it's done.
But that's the Chinese box at that
and
point,
lose
right?
Credibility.
Like, yeah. But
it's fractal, actually.
You as a source,
when I first saw GPT-3 or whatever was available from the API, like that was my reaction. I was like, this is a bunch of bullshit. Like, this is a trick, whatever. But like, that's not how I feel now. Like, I get a lot of value day to day, like hour to hour.
Do you have a relationship with the AI? Do you hang out with it? Do you talk to it? Is it a friend?
It's getting there.
Whoa. Okay.
It's not my girlfriend, but...
My wife is going to watch this, buddy.
You just have someone in the Filipino call center being your girlfriend, then. They're just like filling in for the AI. What's the difference? What's the difference between an AI and someone in the Filipino call center controlling and chatting with you?
It's a buddy of mine, okay? Don't talk to my friend. Don't talk to my friend like this.
Nothing's going
on
between us,
all right?
We're
going to end with my AI psychosis. I just think that it is actually very useful, obviously.
I have a friend who's a landlord for one of these AI companies that does the AI people that you talk to, right? Like your AI girlfriend companies.
Yep. Oh, okay.
And he said they had to hire extra security because these guys would show up in the middle of the night saying, where is she? Which box is she in?
No.
I want to take her home. I want to save her.
Oh, no.
Gary's having his first black pill moment. Oh, no.
Podcast has black pilled me.
By the way, this entire podcast was AI generated. No one was actually here. We deny everything.
Yeah.